Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
And hello, everyone. Nice to be with you here on Home and Family Finance here in the seasons change and things are getting a little cooler around our country and around the world, for that matter, I guess, on this part anyway. You know, the thing I like about this is that this time of the year is that you do see and reflect the changes, and it feels good, and you feel like maybe you get a fresh start here on things as we head into October, November, December, the last quarter of the year. One of the things that we have tried to do is to stay on top of the issues that come up that have such an impact and can have an impact on your home, your family, and your finances. And certainly nothing can have more impact than the cost of health care. So you want to stay healthy. But that's not always the case, is it? And when you're not healthy, you look for the best possible care and the best possible insurance that takes care of it, that helps you with the cost of insurance, with health care. One of those companies is Cigna. I happen to be a signatory to Cigna myself, and they've done a recent study. And it's interesting. The study says that and it says it's no surprise that simply not knowing health risks can be more costly to you. The study specifically looks at manageable health conditions such as obesity and high cholesterol, diabetes and high blood pressure, and how they can lead directly to significantly higher out-of-pocket costs for those who don't know, who are unaware of their various measures. And when you think about it, it really makes sense. If I don't know, I can't do anything about it. But if I do know that I'm suffering from something, and sometimes it's hard to know, but you should know, it's likely going to be less expensive. It's not going to cost as much to get you back to health. That's going to be our first topic today, as we have Dr. Peter McCauley Sr., the Regional Medical Executive for Cigna's Northeast Region, a broad area that includes 25 states in New England, the Northeast, Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He knows about this study, and he's going to join us to talk about that. And then in our second segment, we're going to talk with Chad Bennett. Now, Chad works with an agency called AFFN, and this is the Armed Forces Financial Network, AFFN. And we're going to be talking about VMP. Do you know what that means? Have you ever heard of it? Do you understand what it means? We're going to tell you what it's about in terms of how it can protect you. I think you'll find Chad's comments very interesting and very informative and good for you. But first, let's get to Peter McCauley Sr. As we talk about Cigna's affordability and incentive study. Peter, thank you and welcome to Home and Family Finance.
Paul, thank you so much. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here on your show to share some information that I'm sure your listeners will find valuable.
Absolutely. And if you would, provide some background on this study. Why did you do it, and was it a study of your customers?
Absolutely. It was, in fact, a study of our Cigna customers. We actually conducted this study to better understand the correlation between health risk, health improvement, and the impact of incentives and rewards on engaging customers to improve their health while reducing their medical costs. The study actually included data from 200,000 employer-sponsored Cigna Health Plan customers, mm-hmm. which was compiled over 3 years.
Sometimes the simplicity of something is the genius of it. Obviously, if you don't know you're suffering from something, if you don't know what's hurting or harming you, you're not going to take any steps to make a difference until you do know. And that's basically what you were trying to find out here, right?
Exactly. And that's a very good point. The reality is that there are a handful of correctable health conditions like high weight, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and high blood sugar that contribute to 50% of health care costs of American workers. And that can potentially double to quadruple their health premiums and out-of-pocket medical expenses. So if an individual does not know their situation, it certainly would make it difficult to manage mm-hmm. and difficult to intervene appropriately.
So what are the barriers then to people knowing their numbers? What are some of the things that keep them from knowing what they should know, Peter?
Well, you know, as it turns out, many people actually don't take advantage of preventive care services and biometric screenings that are often included as part of their health plan at no charge. These services can help people to identify their biometric numbers, including blood pressure, cholesterol, and those types of things can allow them to catch health issues before they become more serious and, as you've pointed out, more costly.
And, you know, and it's not that difficult. I mean, you can know. You go into a drugstore and they have those machines that say, you know, and sit down and find out what your blood pressure is. That seems sensible. Is that reasonable? Should I do that?
You know, those are, as we look at healthcare and how services are administered, we know that those types of services are available more so now than they were previously, and it's perfectly reasonable to take advantage of that type of situation. Additionally, because biometric screenings are so short and to the point, they can be accomplished by visiting the physician office. Some employers provide biometric screening circumstances on site, and it really is a matter of obtaining measurements like height, weight, waist circumference, and then something as simple as a finger stick to determine, for example, cholesterol or fasting blood sugar.
Right, right, right.
So to your point, it's very simple, easy, and really should be taken advantage of.
Okay, and I think if I hear you right, and we'll take a break here, is when you can get to a qualified physician to look after you, do so. But if you run across one of those things, it's not such a bad idea to find out what you can. We're talking about an issue that affects you directly, folks. So you've got to deal with this. And we thank Peter McCauley for being here with us. Dr. McCauley will be right back, and we'll have more. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Dr. Peter McCauley, Sr. He is a pediatric. I guess your specialty is pediatrics. Is that right, Peter?
That is true. I'm a pediatrician by training and practice and have been involved in administrative medicine now for almost 26 years.
Wow. And folks, the important part here is we take you to the doctor, and the only cost to you is taking time to listen. And Peter, we thank you for joining us because this is so simple and yet so important. In order to improve your health, folks, you need to know what you're suffering from or what you have. And there are all kinds of ways to find that out, primarily through your physician. But once you do know, you can take steps to make a difference that would improve your health. But there are costs associated with not knowing what your numbers are. Tell us what some of those costs are, Peter.
That's a very good point, Paul. Just to take a perspective, if you look at body mass index, for example, an increase of a body mass index above 30 will increase healthcare costs by an average of $2,460 per customer per year.
Wow.
Someone that has a cholesterol reading of more than 240 could expect an average total increased healthcare cost of $1,644 per health plan customer per year. And someone who, for example, has two or more chronic conditions, as indicated by, for example, an unhealthy body mass index, blood pressure, cholesterol, and blood sugar, that raises the annual out-of-pocket expense by almost $1,300 a year and total health care costs by nearly $9,000 a year. Your point is very well taken, that not knowing can be detrimental to one's health, but it can also be expensive.
Yeah, and that's the other part of it. Not only are you going to hurt your health, but you're going to hurt your pocketbook because it's going to cost more. And I guess said another way, Peter, you know when you're fat. You know when you're overweight. You know when you don't feel good. Don't ignore those things and say, okay, I'm going to be just fine. If you are overweight and tremendously overweight, chances are you've got a problem, right?
That is true. And obesity is one of the things that's a significant challenge for us in this country. We're probably at about 60% overweight, with a significant portion of those being actually obese. And it's easy to say, let's just cut down on the calories and exercise more. But there are programs like condition management, weight loss management and nutrition programs that health plans can offer employees to really help control their conditions and do better and have better outcomes.
Are you finding more and more employers are understanding the importance and the cost of a patient that's sick? Are more and more employers and companies now willing to engage in terms of the health care and the health outlook of their employees?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, I think one of the things that employers are starting to recognize is that the best way to financial efficiency is having a healthy workforce. And that's why many employers are now engaging their employees in wellness programs, fit at work programs, biometric screenings, all those things to identify risks, to identify issues, and then help the employees to address them.
Now, and it's so important, folks. And what we're saying is that you should take advantage if you're working, if you are employed. And according to the Sigma study, the good news is that health improvement programs and incentives offered by employers at work is making a positive difference because the annual total health care cost impact all of us. That's the bottom line.
That's absolutely right. And just to follow up with a point that you started to make, there is some good news in all of this, and that's that our Cigna study did show that health improvement programs and incentive strategies are proven to help people address those conditions, which increase health care costs, as we've discussed. For example, as I mentioned, many employers now have programs for specific coaching on weight reduction, and pairing those with incentives then allows individuals to not only take advantage of the program, but to help reduce their health care costs.
We've got to stop for just a minute, but I want to come back. I want to talk about some of the totals that you all found in the study. And then let's talk about, you know, the tools that Cigna is offering to help consumers improve their health. It's a partnership between your health provider and you folks, and you have got to do your part. We'll be right back with Peter McCauley and talk more about the results of this study. You're listening to Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors, the Defense Credit Union Council, DCUC, and we thank them for their continued support, and CUNA, the Credit Union National Association, both dedicated to making all of us smarter consumers. And if there's a topic or subject that you want to discuss, please write to me here at Paul Berry, Radio America, 1100 North Glebe Road, South, Suite 900, Arlington, Virginia, 22201. That's 1100 North Glebe Road, Suite 900, Arlington, Virginia, 22201. Or you may contact me on my website at hffradio.com. And speaking of the Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions, we believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, support, and encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically, and go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And whether you are in the military or not, all of us should be saving a little something every day. It feels good, folks. It feels good when you have to come back and you need that money and you've saved it. And boy, there it is all for you. So everybody, also plan to save. Also plan to participate in understanding your health needs by working closely with your health provider. A recent Cigna study shows that if you know what you're suffering from, you can make a difference in how much it costs to handle it, to deal with it. It makes a big difference. And that ultimately, the most important, is that you can improve your health. No one knows that any better than Peter McCauley Sr. He's one of the regional – he is the regional medical executive for Cigna's Northeast region. And he is with us to talk about the study that Cigna did. If you would, what are the positive and negative impacts these results have for consumers once you take a look at everything, Doctor?
Well, we talked about the good news in terms of identifying those risks and being able to reduce costs. But we've been able to take things a little bit further, Paul. We are actually committed to helping people improve their health, their well-being, and sense of security by providing integrated health management tools and information, mm-hmm. which is designed to make managing health intuitive, interesting, and rewarding. Just to give an example, we recently launched a comprehensive health management ecosystem called Health Matters. Health Matters combines our personal health coaching with four things. One, a gamified health assessment. Mm-hmm. Two, a scoring system that tracks the individual's health status and preferences. Three, mobile apps and web-based incentives and reward programs. Four, and you know that we're increasingly a mobile society, and this puts individuals in a situation where they're able to look at health opportunities, mm-hmm. track changes over time, and link them to incentives that their employers might be offering.
Do I hear kind of a different attitude in terms of how health providers want to interact with their patients? I mean, is this more like we're a partnership than it's do what the doctor says?
Well, I think that the healthcare provider community has recognized that there is an unprecedented access to information. Mm-hmm. And we have to keep up with that as well. And the information exchange is no longer a one-way dialogue from the physician. This is what I'm recommending. This is what you should do. It's really a two-way dialogue around yeah. how that patient receives information, what's the best way to motivate that individual, and ultimately make a difference in their health and health status.
Doctor, that's great news, I think, and I think we understand that more and more of us do. If people want to know more about what Cigna is doing and where, how do they reach out to your company?
Well, the easiest way is online. You can certainly go to mycigna.com/knowyourbenefits. That's mycigna.com/knowyourbenefits. And we also have 800 numbers available that can be accessed at that website as well.
Okay, so you are the Cigna is approachable and willing and wanting to hear from folks to make this work for all of us in a much better way.
I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, I'm very pleased. I really am. I thank you for sharing the study. What a great idea to take a look at this and then decide that, hey, we can do something about this collectively. We can do something about this in partnership. And ultimately, we can not only save money, but we can make it more healthy. Peter, thanks for joining us. Come back and see us again soon, would you please?
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
It's a pleasure. Coming up next, do you know that new safety chip can really save you lots? We'll tell you how. Stay with us. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
And secure with your finances. That's an important part of what we're going to be talking about here in this segment. I'm very pleased to have with us a gentleman who has some great knowledge about what happens with your finances in terms of how you can protect yourself. Chad Bennett is Vice President of AFFN, the Armed Forces Financial Network. Now, you probably have never heard of that, and that's okay. You don't have to hear about them, but they know about you, and they know about the ways that they can protect you. And that's the business that they're supposed to be about, protecting you. One of the ways they protect you is with what we spoke about earlier in the show, the EMV. What is EMV? Folks, there's so much new stuff happening all the time. It's going so fast. And if you're not careful, you're behind time. If you've been to your store any store where you shop, supermarket, Target, Dick's, whatever, they will now say to you, or at least some of them will say to you, do you have the card? Put your card in so that we can read the chip. And you say, what are you talking about? You should have a new card, and it should be, or at least many of us do, not everybody. But let's talk about that so you have a better understanding. Chad, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you here with us.
Thanks, Paul. Glad to be here.
Tell us, first of all, if you would, about your company, the Armed Forces Financial Network, what it is they do. What do you do?
Certainly. The Armed Forces Financial Network, and, you know, it's funny, when we say that sometimes, when we say the Armed Forces Network, we often get confused with the Armed Forces radio show. So it's it's nice to be actually be on here and make a connection. So.
Yeah, you're actually going to be on the Armed Forces Radio Network. So
right, exactly.
Yes.
So the Armed Forces Financial Network, we were actually formed 30 years ago in 1985 at the request of the U.S. Army in support of the SurePay, which was their direct deposit system.
Mm-hmm.
We were to provide U.S. military personnel, which included active, reserve, dependents, and retirees, with access to their funds through ATM and point-of-sale terminals that are at or either near U.S. military installations worldwide. Since then, AFIN has evolved over the past three decades because of the commitment of distinguished participant base, which is comprised of member credit unions of mm-hmm. the Defense Credit Union Council.
Right.
But Artie Arteaga?
Yes. We know Artie, don't we?
We certainly do. And the member banks of the Association of Military Banks of America.
Okay.
Today we actually... Oh, go right ahead, Paul.
No, I'm listening. Go ahead. Today you what?
Today we actually continue to provide electronic financial services to more than 93 million cardholders at over 500,000 ATMs, which are no cross-border fees to our service members when they're outside the continental U.S. We also provide access to over 2 million merchant point-of-sale locations worldwide.
Wow.
We're still growing, and we're trying to accommodate the changing needs of our U.S. service members here at home as well as around the globe.
Well, it's a great thing that you do, and one of the things that we certainly are aware of, and the fight continues, is that there's a tremendous amount of identity theft and thievery, stealing information on cards, going through this whole process, and trying to fix this so that that we don't lose our money to thieves out there who will steal our identity and steal the information from our cards to take our money. That brings into focus this thing called EMV. Now, I've had my bank call me in and said, we're going to give you some new cards. We're exchanging your card with a stripe to a card with a chip. Tell what's going on here, Chad. What does this mean?
Yeah, I'm sure most of you, especially as it relates to credit cards, maybe not so much debit cards yet, but I'll get into that. You'll see a small microchip in the corner of your card. So what that is a new technology, well, new to the U.S., I should say. Let me clarify. It's a technology that's actually over 20 years old, which was developed by Europay, MasterCard, and Visa, hence EMV, the acronym there, Those are the three organizations that initiated the chip payment technology over 20 years ago. And EMV is a secure payment technology that actually uses an embedded microprocessor chip that you see on a credit, debit, or even a prepaid card. And what's different is it actually uses dynamic encrypted security credentials, which authenticate, verify, and authorize a transaction. So each time an EMV transaction is conducted, there's a one-time use cryptogram that's actually generated, which carries a unique digital signature based on the information on the card, which can't be used again at a later date, which makes that information completely useless to fraudsters when they're trying to steal that information.
Mm-hmm.
So as a result of this, the technology, the EMV chip cards, offer a higher degree of security throughout the entire transaction process as opposed to the old magnetic stripe cards that we're all used to.
Well, Chad, wait a minute. Did I hear you say that this technology, Europay, MasterCard, and Visa EMV, has been out there for 20 years?
It certainly has.
And, Chad, how is it that we're just getting this technology? What's going on? What happened?
Well, the reason for that is actually there are multiple reasons, but, you know, for a long time, the cost of converting our entire payments infrastructure really did not weigh the benefit to reducing card-present fraud. However, as the technology was rolled out across the globe and reductions in card-present fraud were being realized from Africa to Asia to Europe, most recently Canada, naturally the fraudsters began to focus on other countries that hadn't deployed the chip card technology yet. And that would be us in the U.S. of A.
So they came a hunting, and what they found was
knocking real hard.
Yeah, they found big old fat USA sitting there with 300 million people and a whole ton of cards that were not protected. We're talking with Chad Bennett, Vice President of the Armed Forces Financial Network. Folks, this is a guy you have to know. You have to understand and appreciate what they're doing. When we come back, we'll talk more about this EMV situation, how it protects you, and what the cost of it is. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm Paul Berry.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
My guest is Chad Bennett, Vice President, the Armed Forces Financial Network. We're talking about, folks, a technology that's been out there for a while. And, hey, America, we're now joining the 21st century, because I don't know whether you've been pinged by your bank or credit card company saying, we're sending you a new card. We're sending you a card with a chip and using it. What is that? Well, Chad has just explained to us what that is. Chad, this, how much is this going to cost us, and how long will it take to totally convert to the chip versus the magnetic strip?
That is the million-dollar question, I think, Paul. And, you know, everybody you ask, you may get a different answer, but there have been a lot of analysts that have looked at it and done their calculations and said it could potentially, and this is the entire ecosystem that we're talking about in payments here, cost over $10 billion when all said and done to roll out this new technology.
$10 billion with a B.
$10 billion with a B. And in my estimate, I would have to say it would be significantly larger than that.
Really? Now, what's the liability shift? Explain the liability shift, which is part of this, as I understand it.
Certainly. So we've had quite a bit of a gridlock situation when it comes to implementing EMV, and to help move the U.S. along to the more secure chip cards, payment networks like Visa and MasterCard, they've actually mandated what they're calling a liability shift. We've seen it in the news for many years, and it's finally here. Actually, tomorrow is the day, October 1st, 2015. And what that means is, starting tomorrow, if the consumer presents an EMV chip card to make a purchase, but the seller processes the transaction using the card's magnetic stripe instead of the chip reader,
yes,
the seller, not the card issuer, will actually have to bear the cost if that transaction is a fraudulent one.
An incentive to this is an incentive to saying that if you don't want to bear this responsibility, make the change. Is that basically what they've done?
Absolutely. You know, we have been in a bit of a standoff as of late, because you've got merchants that don't want to incur the large expense to upgrade their systems to enable this EMV technology. And then on the issuer side, you're looking at an expense for a typical magstripe card costing anywhere from 50 cents to a dollar, now potentially costing 10 times that. So the expense that the bank or credit union will be taking on compared to the merchant and what they're paying, you know, the issuer is saying, I don't want to issue these expensive cards if there will be no terminals out there to process them. And the merchants are also saying, well, I don't want to incur this cost if the card issuers aren't going to be issuing these cards. So, like I said, it's been a bit of a conundrum. And so the large global brands, Visa and MasterCard, have stepped up and said, you know what, we're just going to force the issue here. We're going to create a liability shift, put a little scare into the system, and see if we can't inject some movement here.
And this really works to the benefit of the consumer, doesn't it? Because, I mean, that means now that that these cards will be employed, these chips will be employed, and the consumer's going to, I guess in the way I'm talking about it, it's kind of like the silver bullet to stop fraudulent activity.
Essentially, it is, and we're specifically speaking about one type of fraudulent activity. I mean, there's myriad types of activity here, but what specifically this is addressed across the globe is counterfeit what they call card present. So when you're standing at a merchant with the card in your hand and swiping it, that is a card present transaction where you are there physically presenting your card.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, what has happened is those magnetic stripe cards, they can be skimmed and counterfeited quite easily. So this new EMV technology is extremely difficult to replicate due to the technology on the microchip and the validation that is done over the network. And some people say, in fact, that it is nearly impossible to replicate these cards. So, yes, for the user, it is certainly an improvement for their security.
Right.
But you've got to continue to be vigilant about all the other areas.
Absolutely. Understood. That this doesn't solve all the problems, but it does solve one of the big problems here.
It certainly does. It's actually 37% of fraud in the U.S. is card present fraud, counterfeit. So,
Well, I had it happen to me just recently at a restaurant. Went in, we had dinner, and used my card, Chad, which did not have the chip, or you know, still the old style. And before we got out of the city, and that is to say, before we the next day, my card had been used at one of the major supermarkets for about $400 worth of groceries. You know, just that quick, you know. Now, because they recognized that it was unusual, the bank called and said, "We think this is fraudulent activity," and we said it was. So my account never really got charged, but somebody did make off with $400 worth of grocery. So there was a loss in the system. So that reminds that takes me to the next question: what is this whole business going to cost the consumer, Brad?
The consumer itself, there's really no expense incurred as we shift to the EMV platform. It's really being taken on by the remainder of the ecosystem in the payments infrastructure is the card issuer, the merchant, and the networks and acquirers on the back end that are processing these transactions. So you and I, from an expense perspective, other than potentially a bank saying, listen, I'm now paying five times more for this card, I need to offset that expense somewhere. And potentially we may see a rise in fees, you know, which we all love, in the future. So it's hard to have a crystal ball and guess where that's going to go. But,
from a consumer
standpoint, there is no additional cost moving to this technology.
And from your perspective, and I really appreciate you taking time to join us, from your perspective, because you got no real dogs in the fight here, except that's what's the best way for this to work. Are these cards really tamper-proof? Will they really stop the fraudulent activity?
Unfortunately, we all know that the fraudsters are typically one step ahead of whatever technology that we're currently using today.
That's my point, yes.
And so you may or may not have already seen it in the news. Typically, with the magstripe cards, we've seen what they call skimming, and that's when they add a device to a machine which will look like it is where you put your card in, and it's actually stealing that information, and there is potentially someone shoulder surfing you, or a camera is taking your PIN, and then a fraudulent counterfeit card is then made after that. What we're seeing now is what they call shimmering.
Hold on with that. Hold your thought. Let me just pay the bill here. We'll be right back. We're talking with Chad Bennett, Vice President from the Armed Forces Financial Network. Stay with us. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. We're talking with Chad Bennett, Vice President of the Armed Forces Financial Network, AFFN, and we're talking about these new devices, these new chip cards that are being issued by credit card companies all over the country, because the chip in there is supposedly, you can't beat it. I mean, you can't. It's so much better than the magnetic stripe, and that's where I am with Chad. I asked him about that question. Are they really tamper-proof? Are they really can thieves defeat this? And he just had to tell me about shimmering, did you say? Was it shimmering?
Shimmering, yes. What they do is they put a small shimmed device, much like a skimmer, that would steal the magnetic stripe data. It's what they call a shim, and shimmering is effectively taking the data, what useful data there is on that card, and potentially trying to create a new EMV card. They haven't been that successful. It is a super, super low percentage But as we said before, the fraudsters are always finding ways to get one step ahead of us, and it's only a matter of time. But comparing the two, it is certainly a much stronger, much more secure alternative than what we have today.
How has it worked in Europe, where it's been in existence now for some 20 years? I mean, has the shimmering made much of a dent in terms of being able to steal the information from the chip?
No, it really hasn't. They've had really tremendous success when it relates to card-present counterfeit cards, and so it has reduced that nearly 99%. So from that standpoint, it's been tremendously successful. But as we said before, once that avenue of fraudulent activity is shut down and the kibosh has been put on it, they will immediately turn their attention elsewhere, which, as you see in the news today, a lot of it is moving online.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, you just have to stay one step ahead of these guys or try to because they're smart. I was going to say they're brilliant. I mean, brilliant may be the wrong term.
I'll give them that, yeah.
But they certainly are smart. Look into your crystal ball. What do you see in the future? You see that we do convert to this chip. You see that as going to happen now.
Absolutely. I mean, it is definitely the foundation of a more secure future within the entire payments ecosystem. It's a big foundation to build upon mobile, and you've got tokenization, which has already taken hold. You see the Apple Pays and the Samsung Pays of the world utilizing the tokenization, which is a form of EMV, and that is the growth of that will definitely skyrocket over the next few years as the shift to mobile is becoming quite heavy.
Right. It's really magnificent, I think, because it just gives the consumer so many more options. But with those options come some downsides to it as well, right?
Certainly. Actually, in addition to what we were talking about, you know, as we watch these science fiction movies, it's strange how things seem to always come to fruition. we will be looking at, it's actually being used currently today, is the bio scans such as retina scan or fingerprint technology that Apple is using. So as we dive more into that from a biometric standpoint, that is going to make it a much more secure, much more difficult to hack and stealing someone's retina or fingerprint. So in a few short years, I'd see that progress, significant progress is going to be made in fighting back against those fraudsters.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So looking toward the future, Chad, what are we saying? Are we saying that this transition will be completed in 1 year, 5 years, when we'll all be using the chip? What do you see in terms of how long it will take for this country in America to make the full shift to the chip card?
The only thing that I can do is really compare it against other timelines that have happened in other countries, as Canada and Europe. And we have a much more complex system than they do. They have a very centralized system with potentially one debit network along with the global brands. Here we've got 18 debit networks that we've got. We have many different payment processors and acquirers and merchants that are out there. A lot of moving pieces and parts in this puzzle to make work. And so a lot of the experts are saying we're looking at least a 3 to 5 year period as to when we can see, you know, a significant impact and shift to the EMV technology.
But it's coming. It definitely is coming.
Most certainly.
Great, Chad. Thank you so much for pulling our coat here, giving us a heads up on what's happening here. And I know, as you've said to consumers, the important thing is to be ever vigilant about your security. Don't assume that somebody else is protecting you. Protect yourself. Thanks for being with us. Come back and see us again soon, would you please?
It was my pleasure. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Pleasure to have you, Chad. Okay, folks, that's it. You know what? I can only give you a heads up. Then you have to take it from there. And we've given you a heads up on your health care, on your card care. Now it's up to you to take good care. We hope to see you here next week. We'll be right back here in the same place. Please join us. This is Paul Berry for Radio America.